Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for all things Kings of War. Join your hosts, Mark Zielinski, Jeremy Duval, and Rob Phaneuf as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Daniel Reed.
And I'm Rob Phaneuf. And as you heard, we had the first time, I think, maybe Mr. Daniel Reed is not on the Narrative Workshop.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
I'm very pleased to be here and surprised.
As Chris Walsh said, we had him on the show. He was also very surprised at his run. So I think he ended up finishing like 20th overall. Your miraculous finish at 9th was amazing. And I'm sure it surprised not only you, but a few other people too. I mean, this was your first Clash of Kings.
Yeah, but not my first tournament. But even saying that, I haven't been to very many.
Well, you got a lot of kind words from a couple different players, because obviously we had two of your opponents on, both Tom Robinson and Chris Walsh. So you obviously put some effort in. Obviously you have a pretty army, but you obviously put a lot of effort into the list itself. Before we get to Clash of Kings, though, let's go around and what have you been working on lately?
Well, all my effort had been sorting out my doubles army for Kings of Hearts 2, which I attended a couple of weekends ago, I think it was. I was paired up with a Trident Realms player, and I was playing dwarves, obviously, so I had a couple of units to sort out. Had some old Marauder dwarves to turn into Iron Guard and make a unit of those, and then just sort of spruced up my Earth Elementals and made sure everything was nice and pretty. And so that was my project up until that point. And now I'm in sort of hobby downtime, kind of working out what my list of stuff is to do and, you know, what gets put to the top of the lead pile and all that kind of stuff. So I haven't quite worked out what I'm going to be doing, but I'll probably do a few of the Doctor Who miniatures that I collect from Warlord as a sort of palette cleanser. And then I'll probably get right into my Vanguard stuff.
Well, you're a prolific, you know, painter. We see all of the time a new picture. As you said, lots of Doctor Who, lots of dwarves. What army or what faction are you playing in Vanguard?
I'm going to go for Basileans to start with, because I really like those models. And I've always been kind of like a good player rather than an evil player, if you know what I mean. And I like painting gold and kind of swishy robes and stuff like that. So I'm going to go for them. But I am going to paint all the factions in due course. So that I'm, you know, I can get people to play demos and things like that. But I'm going to do the Basileans first. And that's being held up slightly by the fact that I want to get some green stuff rollers to do the bases and make them nice sort of temple cobblestone bases and stuff like that. So I need to do a big order with Green Stuff World. So there's a bit of a hiatus there. But yeah, I'm going to be doing Basileans for the foreseeable future until those lovely dwarves come out.
Green Stuff World makes some amazing texture rollers. I know our guys in our club, they all use them. What a simpler way to make a really cool base.
I think it's the way forward, really, because since most games have moved to round bases, you just can't find square scenic bases anymore. I asked a question at the Q&A at Clash of Kings with Mantic. I said, is there any possibility that Mantic could do square scenic bases, seeing as Kings of War and Vanguard seem to be the last remaining square-based games? And unfortunately, the answer was that it's not really viable for them to do. So I think make your own and do your own stuff is the way forward.
Or 3D printing, I guess, is another option. I know with
indeed
form up battle bases, they're doing it more for the unit sized, you know, bases. But what do you think of the models for Vanguard?
Oh well, yeah. I mean, I've waxed lyrical about this on Facebook many times to different responses, but I think Mantic have really turned a corner. And for a company of you know, that's about 20 people, the miniatures they've produced for Vanguard are, I would say, controversially, better than a lot of stuff that Games Workshop has come out with recently. Not wanting to cause any arguments, but the amount of detail that's in these miniatures, which in a lot of cases are not heroic scale, they're you know, they're a bit more 28 mil than a lot of models out there. And the detail is absolutely astonishing. And the poses are fantastic. So, yeah, it gets 10 out of 10 from me.
And when your Kickstarter, what did you back? Did you get everything? The Giant Pledge, all the factions?
I got Giant Pledge plus I upgraded the mat to a mouse mat. My biggest regret was I did not get the dwarves.
Oh.
Yeah.
Come on. Of all the people I know, you would be the person that I would have thought would have bought the dwarves.
Well, you know, sometimes you get a little bit sick of the faction that you play all the time and you kind of go, oh, you know, I'm going to try something different. I'm going to branch out into a different direction. And also I had set myself a budget and I thought I was being really good. I thought to myself, well, you haven't exceeded your budget. You've gone, you know, you've been very good. You've not been distracted by all the shinies. And of course, at that time, it was only a sketch of the models that they were going to produce. And so I thought, well, you know, they could be good. They might not be good. And then, of course, we saw the renders and we've seen the models and everyone out there is kicking themselves, including me.
Yeah, all I got was the Abyssals, the resin Abyssals models. And as you said, they're definitely the best models I've ever seen Mantic produce, especially on, you know, the infantry sized. And if this is what is to come, we're in very good hands.
It's very exciting.
Well, on our end, we started streaming yesterday. So those of you that joined us, we appreciate it. More to come. You know, we did two games yesterday and it went over okay, I think. We learned a few lessons. Obviously, trying to stream over Wi-Fi is, you know, a little problematic. I think there was a little bit of drop in quality at times. And I think actually in our first stream, after about 5 minutes in, it just dropped. But fortunately, the rest of the way we didn't lose coverage. So we'll be working on that. And obviously, the sound is another issue that we're still working on. We're just using a microphone that I had just laying around. So we're going to be playing with the settings and try to improve the sound. But we would appreciate if you head over to our Facebook page and you check out one of our streams. They're up there for you to watch. Watch them and let us know what you think. If you like the coverage, video angles, you know, all those things, give us any feedback you want to share. We would appreciate it so we can continue to improve. Well, I think it's time. Are you ready, Daniel?
I'm always ready, Rob.
Well, let's jump in. One thing I wanted to ask you before we get into Clash of Kings is tournaments. So it seems like you've jumped in off the diving board into the deep end with tournaments. And then now it seems like you're going to one every weekend. Because as you said, you had the doubles event, Clash of Kings. I know, did you go to Reaper?
I did, yes.
Yeah, yep. So what made you make the leap?
Well, yeah, it's interesting that for a long time, I'd never done any tournaments when I was playing Warhammer Fantasy back in the day. In fact, no tournaments of any game whatsoever, because the reputation that tournaments had back then was not a good one. And the idea of turning up with your fluffy Warhammer army and getting your face pounded into the carpet was not an attractive way to spend a weekend. So it was never on my radar back then. But as a result of getting into Kings of War, the tournament scene is quite lively and quite a big part of the social media coverage of Kings of War. So from the very start, it kind of intrigued me. And when you're starting off in a game and you don't know how to play and you haven't quite got the rules down pat, you don't think about that at all, because you kind of think, well, I would get my face smashed. But as I've gone on, I played a lot of Kings of War on a casual basis, and I kind of started getting intrigued and thinking, well, could I go to a tournament and could I perhaps not disgrace myself completely in the process? Because I think you probably know the feeling that you get to a point sometimes when you're playing a game and everything's working for you and you're rolling well and you finally get your head around a couple of the weirder rules that you didn't quite get before and things start becoming clear to you and you think to yourself, well, I'm hitting all cylinders at the moment. Maybe I should test myself. And so that's kind of how it was. But also, people in the Kings of War scene tend to be very open about tournaments. They tend to want to encourage other people to take part who haven't done it before. A lot of the coverage that Countercharge has done of tournaments has been very encouraging to people who haven't been before, saying, you know, a lot of them are a great day or couple of days out. You get to play lots of games. You don't have to take them seriously if you don't want to. There's lots of pretty armies to see, and it's generally fun. So I was very much encouraged by that, and I just decided to take the plunge one day, really.
So what other tournaments do you have on the horizon?
Well, I don't think I'm going to do any more before Christmas, although there are a couple that I could go to. There's the next Reaper one, and there's also, I can't remember what the name of it is, but there's one in Sheffield, which is very near to me where I've moved to. But I think my next one is going to be Franticon in March, and I'm probably going to do the singles and the doubles.
I've been listening to Frantic Gamers. I love the podcast, and I think that event's going to be amazing.
It's very exciting, and it's also very annoying because I lived in London for 13 years, and we very recently decided we were going to move to the Midlands. And just as I moved to the Midlands, the London tournament scene is starting to blow up. Ironically, so I've found myself traveling back to London quite a lot to go to these tournaments, but it's good because my parents still live there, so get a bit of free accommodation, know how to get around, so it's all a bonus, really.
The trick, though, is when are we going to get you to the US for a tournament?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, you see. We were having a chat at Clash of Kings with some of the guys who do come over to the US events. You know, and we were discussing strategy and the way to approach your other half about it, which seems to be declare that why don't we go to America for a lovely holiday to start with, and, you know, have a look at some attractions and, you know, get them interested, and then go, oh, and by the way, there's the Kings of War tournament at the weekend, would you mind me going to that? So I'm gonna try that maybe in the future.
Tread lightly. You know, it's,
oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I think that works for some people. I think my wife would just go, hey, I can see through the ruse. All right. You cut to the chase. You want to go to the US, you know, or in my case, go to the UK. I get it.
Yeah. My partner's very good. She indulges me and she lets me do my thing and, you know, doesn't complain about it. She does just say occasionally that she's a Kings of War widow. But yes. Normally she's very good.
Well, let's talk about Clash of Kings. How far from Element Games, where it was held, are you located now that you've moved to the Midlands?
Yeah, I'm not far away. I'm about an hour and 20 minutes on the train, which, you know, is reasonable in the UK. Is obviously absolutely nothing if you're from the US. Having said that, if I'd still been in London, I might not have decided to go on the basis that it was a little bit further, a little bit longer journey, and stuff like that. But I kind of made the decision on the spur of the moment in September, having moved house and the dust had settled, and I felt like I could, you know, go and do something. So I was very up for it, considering it was only an hour and 20 minutes away.
Are you in a new club up there?
No, it's a difficult situation up here. There are a couple of clubs. They're not very, well, not at all playing Kings of War stuff. I haven't really established myself around. I've had a couple of games with somebody. The local shop isn't huge on Mantic stuff, so it's going to be a kind of question of creating something, and I haven't started that yet, so we'll see how it goes.
Absolutely.
But I think maybe tournaments are going to be my go-to thing to get my games in for a little bit.
Well, let's talk about the venue. Was this your first time there?
Yes, never been there before. I was very impressed. Yeah, it's a great place. I think it had recently been refurbished and done up, according to people who've been there before. Huge amount of space for tables. You know, there was a bar. What more do you need? There was food. Yeah, it was all very convenient. I managed to get myself an Airbnb a couple of streets away. So it was a great experience, yeah.
Give me your overall thoughts on the event, like in terms of the turnout, the quality of player, the quality of paint.
It was very impressive. It seemed to be that there were just a lot of people who were just Kings of War players there. There was no kind of like, here are the elite people, or, you know, here are the not elite people. It was just people getting their geek on, really. There were a lot of people who had come with their families, I think, as well. Some children, I think some younger people were taking part in the tournament, and there were some partners and children and all that. And it all felt like a very friendly atmosphere. And, you know, there was no element of judgment or, you know, no snobbiness or anything like that. It was just great. I felt completely at home as soon as I got there.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about Kings of War in general, I think, is that I think we have a quality of person that's very warm and inviting, and well, as you said, there's no, hopefully, no gatekeeping or no elitism. It's just Kings of War's for everybody.
Totally, totally, I would say that. Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about your list. You obviously played Dwarves. What was in your list?
This was a list that I took. I told you that I'd only decided to go to Clash of Kings you know, really on the spur of the moment the month before. And so I thought to myself, well, I could create a new list at this point, or I could use one that I'd used loads of times before in my club league for about a year. And for reasons that we shan't go into now, the club league was Clash of Kings 17 rules, not Clash of Kings 18 rules. Mm. It caused some controversy at the time. I obviously pushed for the latest update to be used, but not everybody's really au fait with how Mantic do stuff. So the person who was in charge decided it was going to be COC 17. So I made a list for that. And I thought to myself, well, shall I bring it to Clash of Kings? Because it's obviously a dated list. It has no behemoths in it. It has no special spells. It has none of the updated items. So I had a Horde of Ironclads with a Helm of Confidence. The reason they had the Helm of Confidence is because there's no other overall inspiring in the list. Everything that is inspiring just inspires certain things. Regiment of Rangers with nothing. A Horde of Earth Elementals with the Mace of Crushing because I had 5 points left over. Got the classic two regiments of a Berserker Brocks with Potion of the Caterpillar and the Brew of Strength. Three Organ Guns, controversial. Berserker Lord with the Blade of the Beast Slayer, pretty standard. A King with the Wings of the Honey Maze. A Stone Priest with Bane Chant and Surge and the Amulet of the Fireheart, which allows him to do two spells once a game. A Battle Driller and a Greater Earth Elemental. So people who are in the know can obviously see from this that it's very much the Brocks, Glocks and Rocks situation with perhaps less rocks than might be standard.
Yeah, and three Organ Guns is it tells people, hey, I'm here to, you know, this is no joke.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. You don't see three Organ Guns very much anymore. And I think one of the obvious reasons is they don't contribute unit strength. They can't take objectives in the way that they could right at the beginning. So they are a bit, you know, quite a chunky investment in points into something that can shoot really well or perhaps not so well, depending on how your dice are.
Looking back on your list, what would you have changed?
I wouldn't have changed anything, because if I'd have changed anything, I wouldn't have known how to use it. And the whole point of using this list is I knew exactly what everything could do and what I needed to do with everything in the various scenarios. So it was basically a crutch for me, really.
Were there any standout units over the weekend?
Oh, God, yeah. The Ironclad did some serious jobs for me at the weekend. They killed a horde of Basileian knights, paladin knights. And they were generally very good at sitting on objectives. And what else did they kill? Oh my goodness, can't remember. They did some killing. Let's just say that for dwarves with hardly any crushing strength hitting on fours, they did a lot of killing. So yeah.
Did they were they a regiment or a horde?
They were a horde. Yeah, they're my horde that sort of walks up and sits on things and says, "Look, I'm unit strength. Take me out."
But they did their job.
They did their job and more so, yeah.
So let's get into your games. You know, if you want to touch on your games, you know, kind of give us your opponent, what army they were playing, the scenario, give us a lay of the table. Maybe this would be a question going in, actually, before we even get to that. What were your thoughts on the setup of terrain? Was that similar to what you had been playing in other events? The amount of terrain, the density, that kind of thing?
Yeah. It's an interesting thing in Kings of War is that the terrain is what you make it, isn't it? There's no hard and fast rules in the rule book saying you must do this, but there is the conventional wisdom that says more terrain is better than less. And I think I definitely subscribe to that. But within that, I try and, if I'm having a casual game, I will try and set stuff out the way that I've seen it done. And try and have a good amount of every single type. So if you don't have any fences or walls or anything on the table, then, you know, an army with all Pathfinder is going to find it very easy. So at least put a couple of those on to give someone a chance against forces of nature to take their, you know, to get them hindered a little bit in certain places. So in terms of my casual games, I always try and manufacture that board. I don't just turn up and say, oh, we'll just use this as it is. So yeah, the tournament boards tended to be about as much. I suspect perhaps not quite as much as American players might want there to be, based on what I know about that. But yeah, it was pretty good. It's pretty consistent.
And how about the quality of terrain?
The quality was very good. Yeah, Element Games have got some lovely stuff. They've got a lot of stuff. a seriously huge amount. So it didn't feel like any tables were caught short and left with bits of polystyrene or anything like that. Everything was really good. I mean, they weren't overly themed. I think there are a couple of lava type tables and things like that, but everything looked pretty cool. I always like the traditional kind of green with peasant, you know, buildings and trees and stuff like that. That's what I like to see on my table, because I was brought up with the pictures in Warhammer books. But yeah, it was all good. It's all good.
Well, let's get into your games. You know, game one, you know, kind of give us an overview of who you played, what army they were playing, scenario.
Yeah.
You know, highlights, lowlights. In your case, mostly highlights.
Before I go into it, I should say I was part of a team. People were able to form teams in Clash of Kings, and there was a team award. And shortly before we went on Facebook, some people were sort of rattling around thinking, is there anybody who wants to join a team? So I went, okay, all right. We called ourselves Team Rejects. We'd never met before. Traveling up on the train, just as we were getting off the train to try to find my way to Elephant Games, a guy saw my case and went, oh, are you going to Clash of Kings? And he said, I'm going as well. So we both kind of trying to, you know, we're talking and found our way to Element Games. And then when we got there, we realized that we were both in Team Rejects, which was weird. So we all kind of introduced each other and said, okay, well, you know. And Chris had actually come to Clash of Kings at the behest of Nick Williams. He had played possibly a maximum of three games of Kings of War before he'd come. Nick Williams had paid for his ticket and got him there and sorted his accommodation and all that sort of stuff. So he was there as a treat. He was on the team, and yeah, it was great. So yeah, my first game was against Kevin Haney with his Basileans, and the scenario was push, which I believe is the one where you've got objectives and they're worth more if you're claiming them in your opponent's half, I think. So yeah, this was obviously you're quite nervous at your first Clash of Kings game. And I was no exception. What did he have? Yeah, it was quite a balanced Basileian army. He had a horde of Sisterhood infantry. He had two hordes of Elohai. He had a Panther Chariot, a Standard Bearer, two Wizards, both with Lightning Bolt. He had a Phoenix. He had the Forlorn Guard, a troop of Paladin Defenders, and a couple of troops of Panthers. So my big priority was, oh my god, Elohai, don't like those. Can't let them get anywhere near me. So I sort of had a tactic, which was that if the opponent has flyers, I send my flying king in to try and tie them up. He may die, but it'll stop them from going anywhere. So I sent him in to try and tie up one of the units of those. I was trying to get rid of his Panthers with my Rangers to take out the chaff and make sure that I could get some charges in. I managed to tie up his Elohai on the left flank with the king quite successfully before he died. And then I think I managed to get a unit of Brocks into them, and they died pretty quickly. So I was happy there. Kevin unfortunately left me a flank charge with my Brocks on his center unit of Elohai, which kind of meant they disappeared at that point. And at that point, I was quite happy. I thought, well, I've got rid of those. I've got a bit of range threat to keep shooting him with, and he can't get rid of it. And so I just basically advanced with all my other stuff. My ironclad sat in the center and took an objective. The elementals just kept trundling forward to take more objectives. And from that point, it really was obvious that I was going to get a win there. And I think it ended up as 16-4, because I had more objectives in his half, and he hadn't got over to my half at all, I think, at that point. I was using my tactic of get the first turn with dwarves, move up as far as you can, because you won't get the chance later. Yeah, it was a great game. Kevin's a great bloke. He used to attend quite a lot of Clash of Kings and tournaments and things like that, but he'd kind of got a bit jaded and hadn't attended for a while, hadn't played for a bit. He had a lovely, I think, 95% Mantic army, which he painted in a brilliant yellow color scheme, which got a lot of people, including Roddy Renton, coming around and looking at it. So yeah, it was a great game, and I managed to get a reasonable victory.
Was that a little bit of a relief washing over you? You got one game in, and
well, yeah, because my entire objective for the tournament was don't disgrace yourself, don't turn up and do something ridiculous, because there is a tendency. There is a tendency sometimes when you do something in Kings of War and you go, why did I do that? Why on earth did I do that? It's like someone else has taken hold of your brain. And you think, well, that's lost me the game sometimes. So I hadn't done anything completely idiotic. I'd had a plan. I'd worked to the plan. So I was happy at this point.
It's funny you mentioned his best lane army, though. I think a lot of times, you know, it's not necessarily the quality of the paint job or the modeling. A lot of times it's just the originality that jumps out to me. When people use something different that I haven't seen before, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, it's I was going to do a Basileian army. I'd had some ideas about doing it, you know, using some of the Vanguard models, and I saw his army and I was like, right, yeah. Some people are a bit discouraging about the existing Basileian Mantic models, but look what Kevin's done. And I thought, well, I can have a go at that myself. So that's going to be a project in the future anyway.
Well, you're sitting pretty. You've won your first game. Obviously, game two awaits.
Yeah, game two was against Pablo Navasquez, I think you pronounce it. Who was from the team Los Violentos de Nacho, which I believe translates as the violent people of Nacho. Nacho was at the tournament as well, but I didn't play him. So I played Pablo, and he had Basileans as well.
Oh.
But this was a completely different Basilean army. He had no Alohi whatsoever, but he did have two hordes of Paladin Knights. I think one of them had the obligatory Potion of the Caterpillar. I think the other one had the Brew of Strength. Yeah. Yeah, and he had lots of foot paladins. He had the Ger Panthers, Chaff. He had a Phoenix. He had some men-at-arms, I think. So immediately my brain said, right, well, these two paladin knight hordes are exactly the same as the two hordes of Alohi in the previous game, so I've got to do more or less exactly what I did last time and try and hold them up while I try and get my dwarves into the middle. So I managed to get the King with Wings into his horde on the left flank, who were in a wood because they had the Pathfinder item, but they were behind some of his other units. I managed to find a gap, zoom the king in there, take off their thunderous charge, and basically they got stuck there all game, which was handy for me. Had my elementals in the center again, had my organ guns, I think, ranged out in the center, so I put quite a lot of pressure on his foot knights and took a lot of wounds off them, which meant that when they got to me, they couldn't really do an awful lot. And then they just got killed. And then the most notable event on the left flank was that his horde of paladin knights with the Brew of Strength were stuck behind a hill. And the objective was on my side in front of the hill. So in order to get that objective, or loot token, I think it was. Yeah, it was the loot scenario. I should have said that. In order to get that loot token, they had to pop up onto the hill. So I managed to get the Ironclad Horde ready at the bottom of the hill within range so that if they made any attempt to get onto the hill, I could charge them with the Ironclad Horde, which is what I did. Stripped them of their Thunderous Charge, obviously took a few wounds off, and then didn't die when they countercharged. And then I think I killed them on the next go with a bit of Bane chart from the Stone Priest, possibly. So at that point, I'd sort of neutralized his big threats, and I'd managed to, I think I got a couple of loot tokens at this point. And I think it was all over bar the shouting, really. I think I had quite a lot of lucky nerve checks, but I also, to counteract that, I had quite a lot of double ones going against me when I was trying to get rid of his stuff. But I think it didn't really matter because I was doing the right things and, you know, putting the right units in the right places. So that was a good game as well. And I got a reasonably good win out of that one. I think that might have been my best win. I haven't checked that one out because I think the attrition was fairly good on that because I killed quite a lot of him. So, yeah, so I'm thinking to myself at this point, okay, I've fluked two games. I must be facing somebody really horrible in the next one.
Or you thought, hey, just keep sending me Basilean.
So game three, here I thought the wheels would come off completely. I was absolutely sure of it. And then I saw Alistair Val's undead army. Now, this was not pretty. He had two regiments of wraiths. He had two zombie hordes. He had werewolves with the Potion of the Caterpillar, a horde of. He had two troops of Revenant cavalry, which you should never underestimate because they can hit really hard. He had a Revenant king with the Wings of the Honey Maze. and I think he had a Revenant King with the Banner of Griffin. He had a Revenant King on the Undead Worm with the Wings. And he had the Special Barrow Whites. That's it, the Flying Barrow Whites, the Barry Whites. So basically, I looked at that entire army and thought, oh my God, it's going to kill me to death. So I put my elementals and ironclad in the center, as I normally do. So that was all standard. I put both units of Brocks on the left flank, and I had my Rangers and an organ gun, a couple of organ guns, I think, on the right flank. This is a game in which I thought I got pretty lucky. All his stuff was very fast, but I think he made a couple of mistakes, which I capitalized on. One of which was he had his flying whites behind his Revenant Cav, acting as chaff on the left flank. And I managed to get my Flying King into the Revenant Cav to strip their Thunderous Charge and hold them up. But because obviously they're both height two, the Barrow Whites were right stuck behind and they couldn't see anything. So he had to shuffle them around a bit once we'd got past that combat round. He then charged those whites into my Rangers in the forest. And he didn't roll very well. And I think he did something like 6 wounds to the Rangers and they survived. Consequently, I also had my Berserker Lord knocking about in the center. He's pretty speedy. He can turn in any direction. So he's sort of a very good Swiss Army knife kind of thing to just add into whatever combats. And obviously, against whites, he's getting his full crushing strength. So in he goes. Rangers go in as well. And I managed to get the whites off the board. So at this point, I got the right flank sorted. I think I managed to finish off the Revenant Cav with some organ guns. So all the stuff on the right flank could then move to the middle. The left flank was the crazy flank. The Brocks kind of went into something to try and take it out. It wasn't the whites. I think it might have been the zombie horde. And we got into a very tricky, sticky situation in which they were there. They obviously hadn't killed the zombie horde. And he got two regiments of wraiths ready to get surged in. And the only thing that saved me was the fact that he'd got his necromancer behind the zombie horde and he couldn't see to cast Surge. And then he had, I think he got a Revenant King there as well, which cast Surge on one of the white units, and he just didn't get enough inches to get in. So all I had was the zombies coming into to the Brocks. They didn't kill them. And so that meant that they just lasted a little bit longer. Then I think I took the zombie horde out with the Brocks. I had another unit of Brocks coming up, which then went into the whites that had failed their Surge. And we were basically stuck in it on that side. And that also made Alistair then redeploy his werewolves from the center to that flank, which kind of meant that I was sitting pretty with my elementals and my ironclad. I'd taken out his zombie horde in the center with my organ guns. And of course, what I haven't said was that the scenario was dominate. So I ended up with all this stuff in the center. And then we had a protracted combat on my left flank, which eventually basically I got rid of his whites, got rid of his werewolves, and I just don't know how I did it, really. That's one of those ones where I was absolutely convinced that I was going to lose it, and I ended up winning it. It was pretty amazing. I was rolling out of the box for my nerve rolls, you know, getting consistently 9s, 10s, 11s, 12s. It did take a long time to chew through those wraiths, and, you know, Alistair knew that the mistakes he'd made were, you know, the instant he'd made them. So there we are. And that's the end of day one. I was absolutely astonished at how I'd done at this point.
Do you prefer the 3-3 format or the 4-2 format?
Oh, 3-3, definitely. Yeah. If we'd have had 4 games on that first day, my brain would have just completely melted. I liked, and in fact, I got to the end of game 3 and thought, actually, I could play another game at this point, but I was quite glad that there wasn't one. Cause I thought, well, I'll definitely mess that one up if we have it.
So what did you guys do Saturday night?
Well, I had to go and check into my B&B. So I went and did that and sort of just rested for a bit. And then came back and just as things were sort of starting, there was a Q&A with Matt Gilbert about all things Kings of War and Vanguard and stuff like that, where I asked my question about scenic bases and stuff. And then a little bit later, there was a quiz. So I managed to sort of get into a team with a couple of guys from Cardiff. And we came second. And guess who won? Northern Kings.
Oh, goodness. Well, it's not really fair, is it? It's got Nick Williams.
You know, but we were one question behind them. We would, you know, if we'd have just, and this is the irritating thing, Rob, and you know, you weren't like this. We couldn't name as many states in the USA beginning with I as they could.
And the reality is that Nick's been over here a couple times now. And so what you need to do next year is recruit an American to the team.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that was the most infuriating thing of the whole weekend, really, that we couldn't beat the Northern Kings in the pub quiz. But there we go. Yeah, had a few drinks and stuff like that, but I didn't tie one on or go on a huge bender.
3-0, you've got to play tomorrow.
I was kind of thinking that, you know. I don't like to take these things too seriously, but I thought, on the other hand, actually, you know, if I end up, I'm 41, I don't do hangovers very well these days, so I retired and got my beauty sleep, yeah.
Get up in the morning Sunday, who are you facing in game four?
Well, game four, this was fun. David Fletcher. He had dwarves, and the scenario was invade.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Dwarves on dwarves in invade. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah. So I thought, oh, we've got a hope here. Because originally, you know, oh, the scenario is invade. Uh-oh, I'm going to be fighting a losing battle in this one. And then I find out he's got dwarves. His army, I don't have the list for that, but his army was pretty much identical to mine, except for the fact he didn't have elementals. He had two troops of sharpshooters and he had two steel behemoths. So I was a bit worried about the steel behemoths. I thought, actually, here, this game is going to prove whether the new stuff is going to win out or whether the old stuff still works. Because obviously my army was the old style kind of thing. So there was that in the equation as well. I think he gave me the first turn, or I won the first turn. So, no, I think maybe he got the first turn. Anyway, obviously both of us charged up on our stumpy little legs to try and get to the center. We had a big scrap in the middle with my ironclad and my elementals against his behemoths. I didn't do too well in the center, but what I had done on the left flank was I had put both of my Brock units plus my Flying King plus an organ gun, and he'd only deployed one unit of Brocks, a Mastiff troop, and some sharpshooters. So I thought, right, I've just got to advance up this flank. I've got the advantage on him in terms of number of units. I can take out the sharpshooting threat with the Flying King. The Mastiffs will go the way of all things. And then I've got two Brock units against one Brock unit, so he can come into me. He won't take me out, and then I can get two into him. So I basically had four unit strength on that flank eventually. And I also had the organ gun, obviously, to keep popping at them. I use my organ guns a bit like chaff. I tend to move them forward if they're not in range. I move them forward based on there's another turn, and I find the opponents a little bit wary of that, because they think, okay, well, it's not where it was. I have to think about where I put things. And then in the center, yeah, the ironclad once. Oh, this is the thing. The ironclad did. The ironclad took out a steel behemoth on their own, I think.
Oh my gosh.
I think so. It took about three rounds, I think. But yeah. Took him out with a little bit of Bane Chant here and there, and some lucky rolling. And what it came down to basically was we both had not a lot in the middle, and he had managed to get his Brocks over from his left flank into the middle, and he was up on the unit strength right until the last turn. My Berserker Lord came in, took the last few wounds off them, and popped them. In which case, I still had that unit strength four on the flank, and we both had pretty much nothing in the middle. But I think I only scored something like 9 points out of that one, because we'd basically killed each other's armies at this point. He was a great bloke. He knew exactly how to use his dwarves, so it was probably the closest game I had at this point.
Sounds like an awesome game.
It certainly was. It certainly was. Dwarves versus dwarves is always good.
And so now we get to the illustrious game five. And we've already heard one side of the story, so we're eager to hear this side.
Well, I wonder if they'll match up. Hopefully they will.
Well, we know the results will match up at least.
Yes, true. I'm pretty terrible at remembering, and obviously I had no idea that you'd invite me on, so I didn't make any notes or anything like that. So, yeah, Chris Walsh, you've got the prettiest army on the table until you come up against Chris Walsh.
Yeah,
that's, as most people know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one of the great things is that you get to look at those units up close. And, you know, he was getting me to put them back in his box for him. So I was having a jolly good look as we were playing the game. So this was Occupy, Chris Walsh. Everybody knows Chris. Awesome army, converted, painted wonderfully. Abyssal Dwarves he had. So this is the one where you've got some objectives on the center line, and then you've got the primary objectives in each other's half, which are worth nothing to you, but are worth 2 points if you're in the other person's half. Us being dwarves, we ended up placing our primary objectives opposite each other, because you don't want to spread things out too much. Although he had the range on me because he had Basusu and he had some gargoyles and he had some half-breeds. So he had a bit of late game stuff there that he could use to take objectives. So my plan was, I need to kill that stuff, except for Basusu. I need to kill the gargoyles at least, so they can't just jump on something in the last turn. So we had pretty much the majority of our armies facing each other on the left flank. He had golems and immortal guard and two greater golems, including the living legend one, and Dravak Dulcan. And I had Brocks, Elementals, Ironclad. But I think what clinched me this one was that Chris was retreating on that flank and I was advancing, which meant that my Ironclad could sit in front of my own primary objective and keep that safe. And my Elementals and my Brocks, and I think the Berserker Lord was on that flank as well, could basically keep Tidging up. He was quite afraid of the Berserker Lord, I think, for obvious reasons. And I just kept Tidging back up, and he kept moving back. So I was kind of on the objectives, on the center objectives, by default at that point. And then in the center, I had some Brocks coming up on his Black Souls that he had stationed in the center, which was another dodgy combat where they survived way longer than they probably should have done, and managed to take out the Black Souls at the cost of themselves. On the right flank, I hadn't put anything on there at all. There was an objective on my side, defended by some Rangers and an organ gun. And the good thing about that was that he had some a regiment of half-breeds, a troop of slave orcs, and Basusu. And I managed to take the slave orcs out with the ranger shooting, which meant when he came over and killed the rangers and the organ gun, he had to sit the half-breeds on the objective, and which meant they couldn't do anything for the rest of the game. And I was afraid that they would redeploy with their speed and come back in to the center, but that would have lost him one of the objectives, which was quite handy. So in the center, I think he managed to get center one with a troop of slave orcs, having ganged up on the Brocks and killed them. But by this point, I'd taken the Black Souls out, which meant the unit strength wasn't there for him in that part of the game. And then by the time we got to the end of the game, I think I'd taken out his horde of golems with my Brocks and my Berserker Lord. But I was so far into his half that I could sit on his primary objective with my Greater Earth Elemental, and I could just basically be there. And because, of course, what he'd got left was had short, stumpy legs, there was no way he was going to, you know, retake those objectives or contest them. So I think that was the general gist of the game. It was very close, very, you know, we were both doing our best. And I think just the fact that Chris retreated meant that I kind of had the advantage there, and I was quite glad that he was doing that. Whereas if he'd have come forward with all his Defense 6 stuff, I think maybe it would have been a draw or a loss to me. So that was that one. Great game.
You have a very good record at this point.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think I definitely did have a draw, and I haven't said which one that was. That must have been. It wasn't the Chris game. Maybe it was the Dwarfs game. Yeah. Maybe it was David Fletcher's game. It was a draw. I think so. Yeah. It must have been
4-0-1. I mean, that's four wins in a draw.
Yeah, 4 wins in a draw
in your very first Clash of Kings. That's pretty amazing.
I was amazed.
Like Icarus, who flies too close to the sun. I think you know. We've already heard the other side. We've already heard from the sun. Let's talk about this game six.
Yeah. So the rumor had been previous to this that I would have been matched up with Tom Robinson. It didn't come to pass. I think David Fletcher got matched up with him. Yeah, there you go. It must have been a draw against David Fletcher. And then he got matched against Tom. and obviously got defeated by Tom at that point. So I ended up with Tom in game six on table one being streamed. His reputation precedes him, obviously.
No pressure. Dan King doing the commentary.
There you go. So my plan was, I mean, the scenario was control, and I hate control. It's the worst scenario for me. I don't understand how to win control with dwarves, because you've got to split stuff up, and you don't want to split stuff up.
There's six boxes. How do you spread it out?
Get all your dwarves into those six boxes.
Yeah.
You don't. So I thought so I was on the defensive at this point. I thought, well, I've had a good tournament. I've had a good run. You know, if I'm going to get taken out, I'll get taken out by the top bloke. I'm happy with that. I'm fine with that. So my objective simply was, don't get tabled. Don't do anything horrendously stupid. And so I really had no strategy to win. I don't face elves or nature very much. So I have really no idea what the stuff can do. And I was terrified of kind of sending stuff out and just getting flanked on all the angles that I hadn't seen by nimble things. So I kind of kept in the corner, tried to keep behind cover. There weren't an awful lot of good firing lanes for my organ guns. And I also split them up, which was a mistake. I should have kept them together because it allowed him to take them all out separately. So the whole kind of zone of control thing didn't really apply with him. So yeah, he surgically dissected and took stuff out, but he didn't table me, which, you know, I view as a moral victory. If you want to see the game, obviously it had been streamed. I think it's been pretty well covered. So basically it was dwarves retreating, doing the odd thing that they might be able to do, getting killed. But he was a very nice bloke, and it was a treat to lose to him. And I've learned quite a lot about perhaps how I'm going to be building an elf army in the future.
If you would have replayed that game, is there something you would have done differently?
The only thing I would have done differently, I think, would be to put the organ guns together, which was a thing that Tom said. He said, you know, if I can shoot them, they can shoot me. But if they're split up, I can shoot one, take it out, and you haven't got anything else to shoot back with. If they'd all been together, you know, he shot one, I could have had two shooting back at him. He would have perhaps had to split his shots to take them all out in one go. But other than that, I don't know. I need to play control more. But I'm still not sure. I would have to take advice from more seasoned dwarf players as to what the standard tactic is there, especially against a more mobile army. So no, I mean, it sounds arrogant, but I wouldn't have done anything different, because my primary objective was just don't disgrace yourself.
Well, the weekend's over. You won four games, lost one, and had a draw. Pretty good weekend.
It was lovely. Yeah, and I also managed to win the Best Mantic Unit competition that was run by Northern Kings, and got myself a nice pint glass, which was nice. I was sort of on cloud nine at this point. I was thinking, well, this could not have gone better for me. I'm fully committed to going next year. And no negatives whatsoever. I felt that my army did pretty well, although I'm probably going to put it on the shelf now because I'm a bit bored of it. I was quite happy. I think the attrition thing was something that I didn't factor in, because none of my games had terribly high attrition, because I would obviously throw units away to win me the scenario. But I think there was an element of, if I'd have won by more, perhaps my score would have been better, but then perhaps I would have been paired up with, you know, really, really good players that would have defeated me, and I'd have done less well. So who knows? But yeah, it was a great time, and I recommend it.
What was the key to your success, do you think?
I think the key was using an army that I knew exactly how to use, and also not getting caught up in killing things, playing completely to the scenario, and being sufficiently experienced by this point that I knew within a certain, you know, within two turns what I needed to do to win based on what the opponent was doing. So literally just the experience of playing lots of games. If you see a person doing a certain thing, you think, right, I have to do this. I know that this unit can do it. I'll send that in, et cetera, et cetera. So it all felt very enjoyable. I never felt stymied. I never felt like I didn't know what I was doing or whether I was throwing something away for no apparent reason. So yeah, I would put it down to that and the fact that I'd taken an army that I knew how to use, basically.
That's good advice. You know, I'm a firm believer that even a suboptimal list or, like they say, salamanders isn't that great. But if you know how to play them, you know, you can win some games.
Yeah, absolutely. And also for your own peace of mind, I think even if the meta is against you or the army selection is against you, just for your own peace of mind, go along and know that you've done everything right and that you've done your best and that that the army has served you well, that you've not been floundering because it's one that you haven't used or that you don't know how to use. I think there's a moral victory. You're going to have much better time if you do that than if you go, oh, I'm going to try and win. Therefore, I'm going to take this elf army that I've never used that I know is the latest net list or whatever.
Were there any standout army lists at the event?
I thought everything was pretty balanced. I mean, obviously Tom's list is pretty horrible, and we'd heard that the rumors going around, like you'd pass by somebody's table and he'd go, everything in his army shoots, what, I don't know what to do. Yeah, those things passing around. But everybody's army that I faced was very balanced, and I every game that I turned up to, I thought, okay, this is reasonable, we can have a game of Kings of War here, I'm not gonna worry about that too much. It was good.
And how about from a modeling perspective? We touched on a couple of people's armies, including Chris Walsh, but there was a lot of pretty armies there.
There was a lovely army that had been converted entirely from Mantic models, and I think it was a herd army, which is quite difficult to do. And he'd used all kinds of other things from their other ranges, like Dead Zone and things like that, and managed to create a whole herd army with just sort of chopping heads off this and putting them onto other things and using the centaurs and all that kind of stuff. And I think he may have been in the running for the best Mantic army at that point. And then there was obviously Kevin's wonderful yellow Basileans that I was really impressed by, and Chris Walsh. Yeah, it was pretty high standard all over. And I've decided, from my point of view, my army was a mix of Mantic, Games Workshop and Mom miniatures. But I'm going to try and get myself towards full Mantic. That's my overall objective in the future.
I know Chris Walsh, his newest army obviously was almost all Mantic. I know there's probably a few things they don't make. So it's nice to see really good painters, excellent hobbyists come over. Because I think over the years we've heard that shtick about, oh, Mantic doesn't... Hey, look, their models are fantastic now. Yes, they've had some duds in the past, but it's here.
Absolutely, and it's a... I find it a challenge. I mean, my Berserker Brocks were a serious challenge to paint based on what they're made of, and also the fact they've got lots of different little bits hanging off them that you're not quite sure what they are. And that's fine if you do an overall army standard tabletop paint job, but if you're going for a detailed paint job, you find yourself wondering what things are. So they were a bit of a challenge, but I think you can make them look really nice. And so, you know, if I go full Mantic for my Basileian army, the challenge for me will be to make those look as good as I possibly can, obviously with the addition of the lovely Vanguard models. But, you know, taking stuff like the Foot Paladins and stuff like that and really making them pop out, I think, is going to be a great project for the future.
You finished ninth, which is an amazing accomplishment. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I was stunned. That would be understating it. Top 10. What more can you do? I can only go down from here, can't I?
Yeah, well, I was just going to ask you, what's the follow-up?
Well, I don't know. It's, obviously I'm going to turn up next year as well, probably with a different army. We won't be dwarves, might be elves, might be Basileans if I get them sorted by that point. So I think it's all going to depend on how much experience I get with those armies up until that point as to whether I can do well at the next one. But it does seem to be the situation in Kings of War is that you have some people who are very, 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 very good and are able to maintain it. And there are people who maybe luck out and have a good day and maybe can't sustain it. And I suspect I'm more of that person than I am of the first person. But we'll see, won't we?
I think you're better than you're giving yourself credit for.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it, to tell how good a player you are unless you test yourself in a tournament situation. And I had absolutely no idea what my level of play was until I started doing tournaments, because you play with your mates, you know, you play with people of varying abilities. If you table somebody who hasn't played as much as you, you think to yourself, well, that doesn't tell me anything about how good I am. So, yeah, I don't know. We shall see. Watch this space.
We do have a couple comments, questions from listeners. And obviously, I'm sure you've already saw the first one from Jonathan Falks, in which he said, quick question for Dan. How, seriously, how did I mention my daughter beat him last weekend?
Yeah, but to be fair, that was in a doubles tournament. And I had a load of fishmen that I had to protect in that game, and they were dragging me down.
This brings up a kind of serious thing, which is Jeremy and I had been talking about, you know, when you're playing against children, I know this is a doubles event, so it's obviously John and his daughter. But like when you're playing a child or a younger player, you're in a no-win situation, because if you play them properly and beat them, you have just beaten a child. And it's going to make you feel terrible, right? But the flip side is, if you don't give them a real game, they're not really going to learn the game, and they're not going to, you know what I mean? It's sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I think in a single situation, that would worry me quite a lot. And there is, yeah. You're right. There is no good outcome unless they tell you before the game, you know, be merciless, just go for it. I need to learn, which a lot of people do, a lot of inexperienced do. And I will try and say to them, do you want me to just go all out? Or, you know, is this a learning game? Should I be pointing out stuff? You know, so if you've got that established, that's great. But in a double situation, you know, controversially, you know, Lexa is obviously the brains of the situation. But Jonathan does have a level of savvy that is often belied by what he tells people. So
coming to Blue Sea Brawl next year, and he's actually downgrading from his esteemed daughter to Kevin Von Felt. That's going to be interesting to see if he's leaving the talent behind in England.
Indeed.
How is he going to fare?
Well, I can't imagine that he's going to do very well without Lexa. But there is a dynamic which in doubles comes into play, which is how you interact with your partner. And how much time that takes off the clock when you're arguing with them. And in a situation in which your father and daughter, it depends, you know, your relationship is already established. It may well be a little bit more fluid in terms of, you know, how you play than if you're matched up with somebody that you haven't played in a doubles tournament with before, and who you end up kind of arguing the toss with, and, oh, you know, we should put that over there. No. What about this? What about that? There's that dynamic to think about as well.
There's a couple things that you've got me thinking about. One is doubles events. Everything you just said is exactly why we try to keep Blue Sea Brawl kind of vanilla. You know, you try to reduce the amount of variables, because that big variable is the dynamic between you and your partner. It's a whole different thing when people haven't experienced it before.
Oh, it's huge. Absolutely, it's huge. My partner, Matt, who took Trident Realms, we'd played against each other quite a lot. Back in London, but we'd never played with each other, and he hadn't played a game of Kings of War in a good 6 months when we turned up to this tournament. And, you know, we've got a different play style. I tend to be, I don't tend to calculate the odds. I tend to sort of make decisions based on experience. And he tends to be a little bit, he's an engineer. He tends to be a little bit more slightly paralyzed by all the variables, shall we say, and not perhaps, because he can calculate the outcome of things kind of in his head. He's never quite sure what to do. So we had an element of the right hand not knowing what the left hand was doing in that first game. And, you know, it was our first interaction in a doubles situation. Having said that, Jonathan and Alexa did all the things they needed to do and beat us on that front. We then went on to win two games after that at Kings of Hearts, but that's at the point when you've sort of established the relationship, you've got the dynamic going, you know what the other person's likely to do. Doubles is a whole different kettle of fish.
The other point I wanted to get back to was, you had mentioned when you're playing a new player or a young player, you know, that do you take the gloves off? And it reminds me of something that Tom Robinson just said, which is from a it's almost like condescending. I thought this was a really interesting perspective. He said, I always play with the gloves off. I mean, I'm going to give you my best game because that's what we're there to do. And I think it's disrespectful if I'm not giving you my best game. Like if I was to say, well, I'm just going to let this guy live or that, you know, if you're pulling back, it's almost like a little disrespectful to your opponent. And I thought that was an interesting thought.
No, I would totally agree with that, especially in a tournament situation. I mean, there can be no pulling of punches in a tournament situation because both of you know what you're there for, or you should do anyway. There's an issue in the sense that if it is a younger player who isn't necessarily of the emotional maturity to handle a tournament, it's possible that they shouldn't be there at all if there's going to be fallout from, you know, getting tabled in a horrible way. But I think that's up to the parent or the carer to ascertain whether they have the emotional maturity to handle it. And at that point, you know, the kid gloves are off. In a casual game, I would say it is definitely worth deciding beforehand whether it's a teaching game or whether it's a teaching by getting your face smashed in game, because you can get your face smashed in 10 consecutive times and learn absolutely nothing, unless it's pointed out what you did wrong, especially with Kings of War, where all the angles are, and you know, it can take a while for people to understand that you've got to measure everything and you've got to check the angles on everything. You can't just push things forward in the way that you did with Warhammer or with other games. And if they know that, you know, then you're laughing. But I think in a casual situation, you've got to preordain whether it's, you know, which of those games it's going to be, so that you can both have a good time.
Paul asked the question. I think you've touched on a few things. He just said, you know, as a relative newcomer to Kings of War tournaments, what would be your advice to others on the fence about attending Kings of War events? So why don't you recap kind of the stuff that you've laid out a lot of good nuggets here?
Yeah, well, I would point people towards Nick Williams' blog article, where he said why you should go to a tournament if you're a newbie, because he breaks it down pretty well. And that was one of the things that I read and went into my brain a long time ago. And I was processing that when I was thinking, shall I go to tournaments as a regular thing? Things can go to and fro. You can read an article like that and go, oh yeah, I'm going to go. And then you can sort of hang around on social media where people are going, I smashed face here with my all shooty goblin list. And you can then go, oh, okay, maybe not. So you can go to and fro on it. And I would just say, if you are in that situation and you are toing and froing, find your local event and sign up, you know? Because there's a lot more to it than just playing games. I don't know what tournaments are like in other games or in Warhammer now or anything like that. But pretty much Kings of War, you turn up, they give you a load of free stuff, usually that they've made really nicely for you, like dice and measuring sticks and stuff like that. And, you know, everyone's really nice, especially in the UK. We seem to have a situation in which there are lots of prizes, there are lots of things that you can win that you can go away with, like wooden spoons or, you know, best newbie or best painted here and there. So you can always end up with something like that, and also everyone's really nice, you know. The player base is conspicuously nice compared to other games. So if you're on the fence, I would just say you've got to try it. If it's not for you, then don't do another one. But try it at least once.
Yeah, I mean, just Kings of War in general, it's one of those things where try it. If you like it, great. If you don't, no harm, no foul. You know, I think there's a game for everybody.
I totally agree. It's one of the best decisions that I made was to switch to Kings of War, you know, back when the great event happened all those years ago. Yeah, no regrets. Do it.
Farther we get away from the great cataclysm, it's sort of like almost become forgotten that we used to play Warhammer, you know. And I think the longer it gets, the more I forget about Warhammer. And does that make sense what I'm saying? I mean, it's just like it feels like Kings of War has always been here.
Oh, I totally agree. And I do occasionally do the odd game of 8th edition now and again with somebody for a laugh. And it occurs to me at that point that that's the only way to play that game. For a laugh, on a casual basis, with both of you going, let's take crazy stuff. I think to have forced it into a format of competition and all that kind of stuff just basically meant that everything was forced into a very narrow meta game in which if you didn't take this, you know, you're lost. And if you did take it, then you smashed face. And the game was very unforgiving in that sense. Whereas in Kings of War, what you bring to the table will always do something. You will always get to roll lots of dice. Some of your stuff will get to smash up some of their stuff, but you may win, you may lose overall. But you've had a good time.
Those are great words to take us out, Daniel. You wanna take us out?
Surely I would. Remember, everybody, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by posting on our episode thread on the discussion forum found on manticgames.com. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.